It's 7 o'clock. We're going to begin our city council meeting for the city of Shore Acres. It's Monday, October 10th at 7 p.m. First order of business 1.0, call to order, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Jennings.
Present.
Alderman Strong.
Present.
Alderman Schnell.
Present.
Mayor Sanford.
Present.
Alderman Hoskins.
Present.
Alderman Bowles.
Present.
We have a quorum.
2.0, Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Honor
the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state under God, one indivisible.
3.0, Annual Report Economic Alliance Houston Port Region, Chad Burke.
Thank you, Mayor. The Mayor mentioned, I'm Chad Burke. I'm the President and CEO of the Economic Alliance Houston Port Region. And it's my pleasure to come before you tonight to give you an annual report of the activities that have been going on over the last year. I've got a slide presentation here. I hope most everybody can see that, but we'll work through that real quickly. A little bit about the Economic Alliance. It is the Economic Development Corporation that serves the Houston Ship Channel region. The mission of the Alliance is to grow the local economy or the regional economy. It was created back in 1985 by the communities that surround the Houston Ship Channel and the businesses. You can see current membership includes Harris County, the Port Authority, 12 cities, of which Shore Acres is one of those 12 cities that are members, and then roughly 250, a little over 250 private members that do business in the region as well. The Executive Board of Directors, which oversee the activities, include Chairman Jim Griffin, who's with Mitsubishi Chemicals, Barry Klein with Shell Deer Park, Brenda Hellier, the Chancellor of San Jacinto College, Lawrence Waldron is with one of our energy companies, Mary Glenn Royal from Seabrook, Karen Gregory with Centerpoint, Steve Cody, who is a partner of Brady Chapman Holland, and then Mayor Tom Reed from Pearland is ex officio. He's actually one of the original, I think he was mayor when the Economic Alliance, then called Southeast Harris County Economic Development Corporation, was created, and still mayor. You can see our footprint. Most of our work obviously centers along the Houston Ship Channel region. Kind of the significance of what the economy that we work in here. It is the largest petrochemical complex in the country, second in the world to Rotterdam, and really in about 2018 or 2019 we're going to surpass Rotterdam as the largest single complex of petrochemical industry in the world. Obviously a lot of containers, number one container port along the Gulf, and you can see the impact that it has to our economy there. Other interesting notes, over 8,000 large ship movements up and down the ship channel, but over 200,000 barge transits annually. So it's really dominated by the liquid bulk fuels and the bunker fuels that go in and out from terminal to terminal. So our mission, again, is to grow the economy. That's measured in a couple of statistics that we'll look at in a minute, but the way that we do that is through all of our membership and through the committees that we work with, which include economic development, transportation, public policy, workforce development, an industry or forecasting forum, business growth, which is business to business, and then quality of life for their communities. Really at the core of what we quantitatively get kind of graded on each year is project wins, which are projects that we work on to try and bring companies to this region or have them expand in the region, creating jobs, creating tax base for our local communities and schools and universities. This was 2015. We had four different project wins. You can see petrochemical and logistics obviously kind of make up most of what we do, creating 63 new jobs and $427 million in capital investment. And I like to put this slide in there because people ask, you know, what is at the core of what you're doing? So at the core of economic development, really the sales part for the region includes real estate searches, site selections, data analysis, is it the right market for us to move our company here or expand here? The fourth bullet is the one that gets a lot of the publicity is incentives, whether it's local, county, or state level incentives. Always seems to kind of make the headlines, but that only makes a part of the work that we're doing. But we will use those when they're appropriate to use. It also includes helping with permitting, especially in this region, permits and regulatory work comes into a lot of the projects we work on. And then the last bullet is really probably the most powerful bullet that the organization has and uses, and that's the mobilization of key members of elected officials, partners, whether it be from utility companies, elected officials, the colleges, people that we can put in front of companies that are considering expanding in the region to help convince them to come to the region. 2016, this is kind of what's currently in the pipeline right now. We're working on 23 projects. Of those 23, it would be 1,500 jobs that are represented in a little over $5 billion in capital investment. There's some really large petrochemical projects in there. You can see the makeup. Most of what we do is in the petrochemical industry. That just didn't translate to those names fell off of there. Category just that did not sit in the thumb drive that's on there, I promise. But so what 11 is petrochemical out of the 23. 8 is logistics. Okay, and that makes sense in this region. We're either making a product or we're moving a product. And 2 are manufacturing that are not petrochemical, like upstream oil and gas manufacturing, which you can see that's a pretty small part of what we do, especially now given the price of oil. And then the other 2, the green 2, is headquarter relocations. And we've got 2 companies that we're trying to convince to come here. One specifically, which will be a nice foreign headquarters to Texas, and our competition is Dallas for that one. So that's kind of the makeup. Obviously, when we move as much product, we have as many people in the region, transportation becomes a key part of our ability to continue to live in the region, and then also at the same time, move that product and goods through the region as well. So the task force, you can see, is made up of stakeholders of the organization. It's chaired by Mayor Glenn Royal of Seabrook and Monty Hines, who is the chairman of the East Harris County Manufacturers Association. So you have industry and cities working together to try and solve those problems. I put this slide in here recently because I wanted to make sure that everybody understood what's happening with all of the growth in the industry and what it will make our roads look like. Because those of us who live, like y'all right here in the region, we have to be able to deal with this somehow or another. So, 2 lines on the chart. 1 is resins volume, and from now really 17 and through 19, 17 and 18 all the way through 19. The number of containers full of resins, the polymers that we're making out here, will triple, almost triple, over the next 3 years. And then total port containers, you'll see about a 50% increase over the same time. And that's obviously driven by the expansions in the petrochemical industry, which are producing those resins. So some of the container growth is population growth in the area. The more we grow, the more we import, the more we consume. But a lot of what is happening will be the increase in production from the chemical industry based off the price of natural gas, which is released through fracking and all the shale plays up in North America here. So some of the key areas, So some of the key areas that the transportation group has identified that need some debottlenecking are the flyover connectors at 225 and Beltway 8. The bridge, as you probably know, has been approved and funded. This widening will happen right here over the next 2 and 3 years. But you still, to traverse between these two, you have to go through the stoplights here. And so all of that traffic will back up 5 and 6 miles down the road each evening. Same thing here at Barber's Cut Boulevard. Similar to what TxDOT was able to do down at Bayport and create those flyovers and got the trucks off the road, that they are considering doing the same thing right here. That dots a little south, that should be right there. But to add a flyover and fly on right there would help get trucks off the road as well. And then we've got six lanes, three going both ways, coming south off Fred Hartman and from 225 once you get here. But then once you pass Spencer, headed back down towards here at Shore Acres, it narrows down to four lanes, two going each way. And so it creates a bottleneck. You can't get the trucks in the out of the far left lane if there's only two lanes. And so this section, this section from really from LaPorte down to Seabrook, down to this project down here, which has been approved and funded now, needs to be widened to give more access there. So these are some of the specific projects that that group is trying to raise up the priority list, trying to get them funded so that we can help get some relief in the region. Touching a little bit on workforce development, we are still suffering from more open jobs than we have qualified people, to the tune of 11 or 12,000 over the next 3 years. And a lot of this, almost all of this, is a result of attrition and retirement, not necessarily the growth in the industry. So to address that, the organization has created partnerships with industry and community colleges to go out and really market these jobs. So last year they touched over 8,000 students through 40 presentations, and this year already over 4,000 students, and a lot yet to go during this school year. So a lot of good activity there, just marketing the high-paying careers and how to get to them in this region. Public policy obviously kind of sets the playing field that our communities and businesses live and work in. Last state session, we helped with some tax cap that our cities all opposed, and all of our mayors signed off on a letter on that, and we were happy to carry that for them. On the 7th of December, we do have a legislative kickoff lunch where we will put all of the region's state elected officials on a panel so you can hear from them as to what they see coming up in the next legislative session. And then at the same time, we'll deliver them our white paper for the region on the issues that we want carried. Each year, we also take a group or a contingent to D.C. Last year, we had 30 different representatives from the region that attended that. We had 23 meetings across 4 days with everybody from the Corps of Engineers, the EPA, American Chemical Council, Manufacturing Institute, 15 different congressional members, and then ended the week with a tour of the White House. Issues that we took up specifically, it's not just a visit, but we identify specific issues, so funding for dredging, hurricane storm surge support, funding for community colleges and workforce, air quality, and then the renewal or modernization of the Toxic Substance Control Act. So a lot of work in the public policy arena as well. I know the mayor came. I appreciate you coming and attending this. But once a year, we will put the leaders of the industry in front of everybody to give a forecast of what this region and really the state and the whole Gulf Coast can expect. And so we had 2 full days or a day and a half of really good speakers. Everybody from the senior VP of ExxonMobil, the Port Authority's executive director, a good panel for exports, a couple of our congressmen, the Texas Chemical Council, TCEQ's chairman, Ryan Sitton, our railroad commissioner, all the way down to our final keynote speaker, which is our land commissioner, George P. Bush. So it was a good day, a lot of really good 2 days, a lot of really good information. So that's just a quick overview. Mayor and Alderman, we have in front of you is a detailed report of all the activities and our most recent quarterly newsletter for you to review as well. It's an honor to work for Shore Acres. You are, like I said, one of our 12 communities that support and work in the region. So we consider it an honor to have you all as members. And with that, it looks like you have a full agenda, but if you do have any questions, certainly open to any questions.
Does anyone have any questions? Okay. Uh-huh. On your workforce commission, when do you expect those jobs to start coming into the area, because there really has been for the last 2 years in that industry?
Which industry?
Well, the petrochemical industry.
Those numbers came straight from the petrochemical industry. So, I mean, they have had The owner-operator companies, so the plants themselves, the Exxons and Shells, those numbers of open jobs really came from their own survey, and that survey is about 2 years old now, 2.5 years old. So they've had a lot of openings already, and then it's kind of a trickle-down effect. All of the engineering and construction and plant services companies that support them, that build the plants, that maintain the plants, that do the turnarounds, they have even more openings for craftsmen, so for welders, boiler makers, pipe fitters, all of those jobs that really, all the crafts that go into building and maintaining those, there are literally thousands of those jobs open right now. They can't hire enough to keep up with the work that's going on right now. So
do y'all have a place where people can go and apply
for those jobs? So there are a couple of things. Good question. One, the consortium of industry and the 9 community colleges in the greater Houston area have come together and created a website called Petrochem Works. And it literally is like the hub of all of that activity. It tells you what the jobs are in demand, what the salaries are, where you can go to get qualified. And most of these jobs, it only takes 2 years, an associate degree at most. Some of them are 1 year training and or certificate to get those jobs. And then it also has a page that can link to individual companies. So there's not one person out there or one site that has all of the job openings, because in the end, these companies are still competing for the same people. So they want you to go to their own website to try and apply for the jobs. But that's a nice hub to try and work that together. So if you're looking for it, it's just petrochemworks.com. Yeah.
One other item is, I didn't see anything on your presentation about the increase in the volume of 18-wheelers that are on the roads right now is tearing up a lot of the roads, and I don't see the repair being made quickly, especially around the railroad tracks. They are so bad you can barely get over them with your car now. Is that something you need to consider? I mean, you get approval for some of these increases in roadways, but
I think maintenance is kind of a critical component of transportation funding that we obviously support that. Again, it's working through TxDOT, working through HJC to try and get funding to spend in our region based on the amount of trucks that we have in our region and the impact that this region has on the rest of the greater Houston area. And so one of our main goals from that committee is to raise the level of awareness of the need in this region because of the truck volumes. So that's one of the key things. Out of that committee, about a year ago, that recommendation came, and that was the impetus for HGAC, the Houston Galveston Area Council, to create a freight advisory committee co-chaired by private trucking company president and Judge Emmett. They co-chair that, and literally that committee does that, tries to raise the level of awareness. They report directly to the Transportation Policy Council. And so it's things like that group is trying to raise the level of awareness, raise the importance of it, get more, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the funding in transportation.
Well, that's where you're going to get the worst publicity that you're going to see is every time people tear their cars up going across some of these areas, sections from Bay Area to La Porte, where that bridge is over the railroad track, that area keeps getting tore up. So there's a number of these places you just go here around here in your car and look and see how much volume is going through there.
Yeah, it's a good point, and maintenance is only going to become a more and more critical issue as more and more trucks hit the roads.
Thank you.
Do you know anything about the shuttle that they're talking about, the shuttle?
So the freight shuttle that is, my friends at A&M have rolled that out with the new technology. I had a real good meeting with Roger Gunther about a month and a half ago, and they went up there. I haven't seen it firsthand, but he went up there and they looked at it. New technology like that needs to be looked at. It needs to be considered as part of the whole region's answer to the number of trucks on the road. How we can make that work becomes a process of kind of working through that problem. Where will we take those containers to? Who's going to take them from there? Where do we fund that new piece of technology to move those containers? But in general, the thought of immediately shuttling them on this unmanned shuttle to someplace out the other side of Katy or up in, you know, far up in East Texas to get them away from us. Anything like that reduces the number of trucks on the road, and so it should be looked at. So yeah, I think it's a good prospect. It's just working through how we can make it work and get the investors to help pay for it. Yeah.
Appreciate it. Anybody else that has any questions?
My question, I noticed that the slide that said surge protection, what are some of the measurements that you guys are going to be using for that?
Well, we're not building it right now. There is some good talk with some of the legislators that are leading that there will be some funding out of this next legislative session to do a final study on that. I think it's got good momentum. Texas A&M Galveston is kind of heading up the engineering part of it with several other different groups. But there are stuff out on the web that you can go and kind of see their models of what they've done, of how they would build it. It's basically an extension of the seawall with a gate.
Like a removable levee or something like that?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. Yeah, there's a couple of different things, technologies that they use all along the entire stretch. So.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm going to exit and let y'all finish here.
Moving on to item 4.0, council reports and requests. We're going to move on to 4.2, our community report. Alderman Snow.
I just wanted to kind of give everybody an update. Today was the deadline for auditors to turn in their proposals to become the audit firm for the city of Shoreacre. So the deadline has been reached. And then on the 24th, so the next regular meeting on the 24th, the audit committee will have a recommendation to council on which firm to use. So I just want to let y'all know we're working on that, and the deadline has been reached. And that's all I have.
So moving on to 5.0, public hearings and public comments. This is an opportunity for the public to address council or comment on items which appear on the agenda. Time is limited to 5 minutes per speaker. Comments will be directed to the city council, and dialogue with audience is not permitted. Council members are prohibited by law from participating in discussion or deliberation of items not specifically identified on the agenda. 5.1, public hearing proposed 2016 property tax rate increase. I'm going to start with Dang.
Public hearing.
I haven't done a public hearing before. Okay, so you have comments. Do you want to start over here? Does anybody
want to
comment?
These are comments on the tax rate. Your general comments will come.
What is it currently now, and how much is it going up to?
Then we'll decide that Thursday night. I guess generally we're not supposed to.
You're not allowed to respond to your answer. You can comment.
Okay.
No
comment.
Yeah. You can comment if you want. If you think that we should increase taxes, if you think we shouldn't increase taxes, if you like the taxes where they're at, we just can't answer questions. If you can tell us how you feel about a tax increase, things like that. Is there anybody else that wants to comment?
Patrick Stanton, 128 City Lawn. One of the things that some of the council has promised when they ran is that there would be a balanced budget. So I would like to see the amount of cash coming in at the rate that you propose, an amount of expense cash going out, and whether we're dragging off the rainy day fund or whether it's really balanced. And I'd like to see not just one set of figures, but like three sets of figures. Say, well, if we do this, this is what the cash flow will be. If we have this rate, this is what the cash flow will be, so on and so forth, so you can make an intelligent decision. And the people that attend will know what you're doing. Thank you.
Anybody else?
I guess I'll comment. I was here the last go around. I'm pretty sure I'm the 3416 Sunrise Drive. based on the spending for attorney fees, TIAs, whatever you call those things, not to be a party pooper, but I feel like our taxes sort of need to go up in order to cover the overspending that we're doing on some budget items. I'm part of the audit committee, so I kind of see where the dollars go. But I think in order for us to like stay afloat, we need a little bit of a tax increase. I'm not talking like $1 million, but just, you know, a little bit, you know, kind of like, you know, I mean, it's like, what, 7 cents for $100 or something that they're, you know, proposed or whatever. I think, if I'm wrong, then you can correct me. But in a way, I think we kind of need it, you know. And then also, too, I mean, you know, say if it all, you know, if our budget is higher than what it needs to be, you know, we're always complaining we need stuff for the parks. You know, there's other ways that we can use our tax dollars, you know, road stuff, you know, emergency funds, whatever, whatever. So I feel like, you know, a little bit of an increase isn't going to be that bad. But if we're going to jump up, you know, a ton, then I think that's where we're going to have, you know, an issue. So yeah, that's all I have.
Sterling Bay, 616 Bakewood. I just want to say I agree.
Doug Wilson, 227 Seagrove. I think we need to be very careful on any tax raising of taxes. We all already know that our insurance rates are fixing to go sky high. I'm paying $3,600 a year right now, and they're talking about going up about $500 a year per year for I don't know how long. They don't know where it's going to stop. We already pay some of the highest taxes in this whole area. We're paying LaPorte taxes, Shore Acres taxes, Harris County taxes. So you need to be real careful on that. We're going to tax people out of their houses here.
Anybody else? Is there anybody else? 5.2, New Moyer. Proposed for the year 2016-2017 budget.
I remain Neil Moyer, living at 1118 North Country Club Drive. The intent on requesting that this item be put on the agenda was because nobody else from the council and the mayor seemed to have the interest of having this on the agenda. At any of the previous meetings, and not until maybe Thursday. That's a sad commentary, since there's not one of you who couldn't have done this and shouldn't have done this. In any case, the only budget proposal that's out there that's available to the public is one which there's a link on the city's site. It's a budget that I understand the mayor put together. And ironically, it proposes to spend approximately the same amount as was proposed in last year's budget, which of course poses the interesting prospect in that last year's budget, if you'll recall the complaints, only got budgeted by taking money out of what some people call the city's rainy day accounts or reserves. having looked at this proposal, I don't see that showing up in the mayor's budget, which of course is interesting because there's no way to get there from here with a tax rate that falls within the range of what the council may consider on Thursday. There are several other items in the budget which I could review, but it was certainly the intent that the council take a shot at this. And I guess the council is going to be mum on this, given the mayor's admonition, and it's not likely the public will hear any of the council or the mayor speak on the budget issues until next Thursday if then. There are some peculiarities which I hope that members of the public will take a look at. There aren't that many pages in the budget. There's a lot of chaff in it. But the point is, the budget that's proposed there doesn't meet any satisfactory criteria for fiscal responsibility. And that's an unfortunate circumstance because this was supposed to be the mayor's chief financial officer for the city, and as I understand it, she took it upon herself to slap this thing together, and she's not said a word on it since this became available late, I believe, in August. In any case, I could get into details, but the mayor only wants 5 minutes of conversation, which I'm not sure really applies to this item. It applies to the general public comments, but I'm not going to exceed that. And I commend the rest of you to try and make it here on the 13th, which is Thursday, because I guess to put it succinctly, that's when whatever action is going to take place is going to take place. You won't know what's going to happen because it's not out there with the exception of this. And I can surmise that some people can figure out how to bollocks this process up some more. But it's highly irresponsible for the mayor and the council members not to have made more than a feeble attempt at putting the budget in front of the public. And if try to wrap up both tax rate and budget all in one meeting is going to be an interesting challenge. So hopefully people will be energized, and hopefully people will have an opportunity to, in fact, testify on the items after they've been presented. Since there's no way any of us can divine what's going through any of your minds at this time or on Thursday. Other than that, that's really all I have to say. I'm very disappointed. I think I see a high degree of fiscal irresponsibility and civic irresponsibility for having gotten to this point in time, with the public essentially being unaware. Why nobody was able to make any comments at this second required tax rate hearing, because they have no notion what the basis of a tax rate could be, even if it falls within the range that's on this notice. Same thing was essentially true in the first hearing, which was held also. So that's it. Good luck, because it's such a good idea.
Moving on to 6.0, administrative report. I'm sorry, public comment. My apologies. We're going to start from over here. Is there anybody over here that has a comment?
Yeah, Paul Greason, 604 staff there. I noticed that a lot of the drainage is still not cleared. Right now the sun is shining, so we need to clear the drain, especially since all of that water from the base portion of 0146 and from the school all comes down byway Seagrove to the slough. I talked to David one time before about trying to get the slough cleaned out, as well as the culverts that go down Seagrove there. But we need to get something done before I wind up with lakefront property again. Thank you.
Anybody else on this side? Yeah.
Just one follow-up. Is there a reason that we have somebody that's actually looking at this stuff? That's drained?
We're not allowed to respond to you if someone comments.
Already.
We can take notes.
Okay, take a note. Please respond to me somehow by letter or whatever, and tell me, or do we have somebody looking at this so they can get it cleaned, or am I going to have to go down and clean it myself again?
Pardon? Is there anybody else over here on this side?
Patrick Stanton, 128 Stadium on. We had a grant to look at Miramar and surge protection, and there were several different ideas floated as part of this grant, and we chose one. And then we chose a committee of people to oversee this. A year ago, I asked about this. And I was told that the Corps of Engineers It had been submitted to the Corps of Engineers, but we hadn't received final approval. I asked Diane Victor the other day, and she says, now we have received approval from the Corps of Engineers. Now, I want to know is who's going to go after the money? Because there is a time limit. You only have so much time once you get the approval to do whatever you propose to do. I gave it, in fact, I gave it back up to the mayor when she was elected, and I hadn't heard zip about this. So, you know, that's part of the surge protection. We're all concerned about our rising flood rates. And we're not going to be able to fight it, you know. FEMA says do this, we're going to do it. There is another thing. There's a program to reduce the rates from FEMA, and I believe it was up to 25%. And we now have 5%. We get a 5% reduction. So I would like for the council to get on the ball here and go after that 25%. What is it that needs to be done? Is this even considered in the budget? Do you need to spend some money to get to 25%? Because our rates are going to go up. We all know that. We can't fight FEMA. So let's try to lower our rates by going after this 25%. And also, since we've already spent the money, let's try to get another grant to take care of the waterfront so we'll have better surge protection. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Yeah, Gonzalez, 3329 Wesley Street. Talking about 7.3. First off, good evening to the councilor and the mayor. I want to address this item. I want to know what's the delay on the FEMA resolution. If you include the holidays by now, we have about 80 days left to make the decision final. We've been given plenty of notice to brainstorm and resolve this issue. This decision is going to affect the livelihood of everybody. What is the city going to do when we can't resolve this? What do we do when we lose the possibility of not having flood insurance? Does a mortgage company just go ahead and just drop us? I mean, what's the answer to it? Hopefully we can work this through and get it resolved soon. Thank you.
We're going to move on to 6.0 administrative report, 6.1
general
report.
Good evening. I have a couple of short bullet points to mention. We're changing our trash collection days from Monday, Thursday to Tuesday, Friday. The utility bills will go out tomorrow, and there's mail service. And in there is a flyer. The council has a bright colored sheet. That's what will be in the utility bills. If you came in off of 146 tonight, you probably saw it's up on our gateway sign. It'll be on the marquee sign here tomorrow. We'll be sending out a news brief, trying to get the word out that we're changing services and changing dates, and also changing the way recycling is done. Recycling will be done by subscription, and that's explained in the materials coming out. When some of you parked tonight, you may have seen a telephone company van in the back. They've been here off and on for about the last 5 days. AT&T is having issues with our telephone lines. It's something that we've had constant battle with them since Ike. And it's gotten particularly bad today. We had about 50% phone and internet service. So if you call City Hall and you get a fast busy, it's this problem here. Just keep crying, and as soon as the phones are back up, we'll answer. Unfortunately, we also lose calls right in the middle of the conversations. So, try to get a resolution there. Out of our hands. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee has requested a topographical survey of Circle Park that they could use to seek grant funding. That was done out of last year's budget funds. That park survey came in and was circulated today, so we have that survey. I met last week with the Port's new Public Works Director. You saw me. And we discussed the Choate Road project. I've mentioned to council several times where we have a force main on Choate Road that has some conflicts with the realignment of Choate Road between 146 and Bay Area, and we'll need to address four or five locations. LaPorte's taking the lead on that. They have a parallel line with ours, and they're taking the lead on coordinating that with the county. We're trying to get the design cost down. Presently, we're down to just under $10,000 for that work, and hopefully we can get some additional reduction. The engineering design work that the county would like to pass through to us is more than the actual work being done. I think that's not quite right. Also next week, I'll be meeting with the city manager of LaPorte and the municipal court judge and discuss our options as previous budget council of perhaps contracting with them for municipal court services next year as we have staffing changes here at City Hall. And that's all I've got this evening.
Okay, so we're moving on to 2.2 monthly police department report to Harrison.
Thank you, Council. Looks like an excellent night for me to be very brief, so I'll do so. National Night Out was actually in October, but it's a good chance to cover it real quick. I see many of my room that was there. That was the best National Night Out we've had since I've been here for 4.5 years. When they presented going to the block parties versus the one unit here at City Hall or at Circle Park, I didn't know if that would work or not, but I was pleased as I drove around to the different parties. Everyone was well attended. There was over 20 people in a few of them that I went to. Way more people than I ever saw at one time at City Hall. So I guess in the next years, I figured we'd go back to one place, but we may stick with the block parties. If you didn't get out and meet your neighbor that night, you really missed out. It was a good time for a lot of citizens, and the weather was very nice. So I'm thankful for that. As far as our calls this month, we continue to have the same type of calls. The calls I worry about are very low. The one thing I always look at is assist by law, because that's basically when citizens call in with something that they think's not right. And when that number's high, that means our citizens trust the police department's calling them when they see something that they think is out of whack. And it gives us a chance to come out, and most of the time it's not. But every once in a while, we find something from a call like that. So with that being said, if you have any questions, I'll take them.
Yeah, alarms? Were any of those actual burglars?
Negative. Okay. Also, I'll mention just real quick, on code enforcement, I know it looks like we do nothing. And I went back and I looked this year. We've had 47 situations we've dealt with this year that's been fixed since January. Most of that's grass and weeds, barking dogs that were excessive, things like that. So there are things being accomplished. This is an additional duty, as we don't have anybody that's assigned code enforcement full-time, as council knows. So this is an additional duty on myself. And I certainly don't get to everything that's out there. But we have gotten some things. You guys begin to hate this probably, but we've gotten some yellow door hangers to hang on your doors to let you know up front when something's going on. We'd like for you to address. I've told council for years that I hate our citizens getting registered letters in the mail as a first line of defense. I'd much rather knock on the door and contact them and give them a chance to fix it. Because 90% of what I talk to citizens about gets fixed without anything else having to be said to them. I think our neighbors want to be good neighbors, and I think they strive to keep their yards and the appearance up.
You know how many did you say? 47?
47 have been cleaned up or completed.
Thank you. And moving on to, thank you, Chief.
I have a question. I just have a question about the new vehicles that we got, because I know that there was we needed computers, and then we were going to put the old cars up for auction. Can you give us a status report on how all that has worked out?
Well, so far, we were given two new cars in the budget last year. those were the two new Tahoes. They are completely outfitted now. In fact, we put the last camera in today that we bought out of last year's money. So the three Tahoes that we purchased in the last 2 years are all outfitted pretty much with everything except for radar.
Okay.
We're utilizing handheld radar to monitor traffic, but they've got the cameras, which is pretty much required for racial profiling stats. So we're doing pretty good there.
Okay. And what about the old cars? Have they been auctioned off?
Yes, ma'am.
We were able to recover some decent money?
I don't remember the monies, Mr. Stahl will probably remember, but they did. We did pretty good on the return, better than we've done in the past. I want to say close to $10,000 on one of them.
Yeah.
So more than we anticipated, I think. But we cleaned them up. I don't know if that made a difference, but we took some time and took some strap and all, put armor on the tire. So,
thank you, Chief.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you know offhand how much it would cost to get radar in the vehicles?
The ones in the vehicle are the moving radar, and so you catch people coming and going while you're moving, and they're expensive. So they're $4,000 or better a piece.
Do you know how many police cars?
Ma'am.
How many police cars do we have?
We've got four total. We wouldn't put them in four if we had the money. We'd put them in three.
Moving on to 6.3, Monthly Public Works Department Report.
Now, the written report's in your packet. We spent six days. We got the opportunity to go out and mow some dishes with the Boomer. For the last several months, I've been happily reporting only four to five breaks on or leaks on small lines, 2 inches or smaller. Unfortunately, last month we had eight, and two of them were 4-inch and larger 4 and 6-inch lines, which are a little more disruptive and a little more loss of water. Not a tremendous value in the loss of water, but just in terms of the size of the line. And that's all I've got.
We're going to move on to 7.0 business. 7.1, consideration of approval of invoices. Do we have a motion?
Make a motion to prepare invoices.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Do we have a motion to approve our invoices brought by Alderman Snow, seconded by Alderman Bolt. All those in favor? Passes. Motion. Moving on to 7.2, reconsideration and approval of ordinance number 2016-225, amending the code of the City of Short Acres, providing that resolution for ordinance is prepared by the City and City Secretary, and the original document should not be taken from Secretary's office. Do we have a motion?
I make a motion for reconsideration and approval of ordinance number 2016-225, amending the code of the City of Short Acres, providing that resolutions or ordinances prepared by the City Secretary as original documents shall not be taken from the Secretary's office.
Do we have discussion?
I'll second.
Oh, I'm sorry. So we have a motion to approve ordinance number 2016-225 brought by Alderman Bull, seconded by Jennings. Do we have discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
All those against?
Nay.
So we have Jennings, McKinnon, and Bowles in favor, and Snow and Hopkins against, and it passes 3-2. So we have 7.3, consideration, discussion, and approval of ordinance number 2016-226, amending floodplain management regulations required by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, so that the city of Short Acres may remain eligible to participate in the National Flood Insurance Program, NFIP, amending flood damage prevention regulations to increase FEMA rewards, and require newly installed mechanical and electrical service equipment to be at or above the designed flood elevation, adopting the most recently updated flood insurance rate map firm, as prepared by FEMA, and to be dated January 6, 2017, brought by Jennings and Bowles. Do we have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve ordinance number 2016-226, which is an ordinance amending floodplain management regulations required by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, so that the City of Short Acres may remain eligible to participate in the National Flood Insurance Program, the NFIP, amending flood damage prevention regulations to increase freeboard and require newly installed mechanical and electrical service equipment to be at or above the designed flood elevation, adopting the most recently updated flood insurance rate map firm as prepared by FEMA and to be dated January 6, 2017. providing for the maximum penalty allowed by law for violations, contains a savings clause, containing a severability clause, making various findings and provisions relating to the subject, finding compliance with the open meetings law, and providing an effective date hereof.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
So we have a motion to approve ordinance number 2016-226 brought by Alderman Demings, seconded by Bowles. All those, do we have discussion?
Yes.
I'm tired.
Would like for Mr. Stahl actually to discuss this for me so that we can all understand what we're voting on.
In your packet is a copy of the ordinance, and I don't know that there are half a dozen copies that are circulated out to the audience. And I'm just going to step through the order here. We have a flood damage prevention regulation in the city code presently that is a condition of our participation in the flood insurance program. And so this ordinance just modifies that. And so the 12 pages here only address those sections that are changed or added. So that said, this is not comprehensive. This is just the changes. The first change is in the statutory authorization. In the years between 2007, when we adopted the current regulations, and today, the responsible entity of that has been changed with the state. It's now the Flood Control Insurance Act, Water Code, and so this reflects that change. The second page, we start into definitions. Most of the definition changes here are additions for clarification. They're terms that were used in the current regulation and are used going forward, but for clarity of lay people reading this, make it a little more straightforward. So we define what the base flood elevation is in this, which is something we always have. Design flood elevation is now defined in the ordinance. There has been a move to change what we have historically here for the last several years called the minimum base flood elevation. It gets confusing because you have base flood elevation, minimum base flood elevation. That's getting even more confusing because the elevation certificates, they make reference to design flood elevation. It's the same as the minimum. And we're making that transition to a design flood elevation. The difference is the base flood elevation is the minimum amount that FEMA will accept, and the design flood elevation is the minimum level that the jurisdiction, in this case being the city, will accept. Moving right along. We then address the flood surge hazard area. That also is not new, but it does define it, and it adds into a discussion of the limit of moderate wave action. That is something new. That's something that will appear on the new map. It is advisory. It's not regulatory at this point. We also include a definition of freeboard. Freeboard is a term that's used throughout our code, but we didn't have a definition for it. So you understand the freeboard is that difference between the base flood elevation and the design flood elevation. That portion is freeboard. We're a boating community, so everybody here with a boat line knows what freeboard is, and that's what the difference is between the real water level and coming over onto the deck. The next item in here is limit of moderate wave action. That's the new line on the map. We've added the definition in here. That is the inland area that the model shows would have up to a 1.5 foot of wave action inland. So as you're at, for example, Galveston Bay, we've heard before the VE zone, the velocity zone, that's the area where there's 3 foot or more of wave action. And what this line does now is it goes into the AE zone and shows you a line of where that 3 foot wave diminishes to 1.5 feet. Certainly does damage. We saw that Ike, and we established our own special surge zone following Ike that covered the area that is east of Sunrise. When FEMA did their calculations and projections and they drew this new line, it matches almost identically with what we had already identified from the empirical damage results that we saw from Ike. The surprise on that in the new map is that wave action is a function of open water, so it doesn't have to be Galveston Bay. When you bring the water up to the flood level of a storm flood level, not a surge, but just the elevated level we have, what you find is that the flat area that we have along 146, as you go south towards Port Road, you may know you're going over a bridge over Taylor Bayou, and if you look off over there, it's all flats and it goes to Taylor Lake. At a storm water level, all that is underwater, and then you have this huge water surface area. And so if you have a southwest wind, you now will get wave action that hits our city on the west side. So it's not just the east side. So when you see the new map, you'll have a limit of moderate wave action that impacts the west end of the city. The next definition is minimum base flood elevation, which is one we've always talked about. This just clarifies that it's the same as design flood elevation. And then the couple pages of just what was previously in there. When we make an update, we show the entire section. So it's a long section that may be a lot of repeat. The next item is the basis for establishing areas of special flood hazard. So this is where we adopt the flood study, an FIS that FEMA does, and it's the FIS, which is volumes I've stacked them about this tall. I believe it's 12 volumes, and it is the research data that generates the map. All that's condensed down into a firm or a flood insurance rate map. And this section here just takes us from the 2007 map to the 2017 map. The next section is the minimum base flood elevation, which we had previously. We add to the title there, design flood elevation for clarification. And this is the first substantive change in these regulations from the past. The new map raises everyone's minimum elevation at least 2 feet in the entire city. There are less than 6 properties that are affected less than 2 feet. So, pretty confident. I don't see any of the ones that I know in this room. Everybody's elevation on your property is going to go up 2 feet from what it is. Right here at City Hall, we're currently 12, it'll be 14. That being the case, some places it goes up as much as 6 feet. That's a huge change. While we're doing that, and while it is not an incremental 1 foot change, since it's 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 foot change, is a good time for us to look at our freeboard. Freeboard is probably one of the most important things that we can do as a community to protect properties, to lower insurance premiums, and to lower them through the discount program, which is the community rating system. In Ike, all the homes were built after 1985. Of the homes built after 1985, we didn't have any flood. We had some that had water in the garage. We had some that were really close. Bioforest, all those homes are at 12 foot. That was what the minimum we required. Anybody here live in Bioforest? How close were you to flooding?
I just moved
here. Okay. Well, yes, ma'am.
I had 2 houses on Bioforest, and when we first moved here from Louisiana,
yes, ma'am.
The storm happened a month later. None of the houses flooded on Bioforest.
Right. That's correct.
Now I'm on South Country Club.
Yeah.
And I went from 12 and I'm now 16 foot.
But the moral of the story is if all of the houses on Bioforest and Windleaf, they didn't flood, but they were less than a foot out of the water. The base flood elevation is 11 feet when those homes were built. We required a foot of freeboard. Had we not, every single house on Bioforest Drive and on Windleaf would have flooded in Ike. So that freeboard is very important. So what we're doing here is changing, if council follows the recommendation, because it's a recommendation at this point, we're going from 1 foot of freeboard to 2 foot of freeboard at a point in time where there's the least pain, because we're already making a huge shift of 2 feet with the map as the minimum. And so adding 1 more foot. Now what's important to you if you're building new is that for 1, 2, and 3 foot above what the FEMA base flood elevation is, you get a decrease in insurance. and in some cases it's as much as $3,000 to go the 3 feet. So while this is a requirement and will cause someone to raise up a little higher, their premiums instantly will be lower, and for every foot of freeboard that we adopt, we get 100 points in the community rating system. And the community rating system discounts go in increments of 500 points. So that's 20% towards another level. And those all add up. Some are small numbers, some are big numbers. 100 is a huge number in that program to get us to a discount. And I know that the comment was made about 25%. Well, we will probably never get there. But through the CRS, you can get as much as a 45% discount on your flood insurance if you're eligible. So there's only a few words of change here, but it goes from 1 to 2, and that's significant. The next section is new and replaced mechanical and electrical service equipment. And this is a brand new section, and this follows the experiences and the damages that we saw here, but also has been broadly adopted in Florida and the East Coast following Sandy, and that it post-storm rebuilding, requiring even though you're not substantially damaged, where you have to elevate the entire house, that you elevate your mechanicals, your air conditioning compressor, and most of the East Coast, they also include water heaters and other devices. What we're doing here is just saying that if you have an air conditioning compressor that you are going to replace, put a new one in, that rather than go set it back on a pad on the ground, that you do like we did over here at the Public Works Building and put it on some 4x4s and a platform and bring it up to the design flood elevation. Or cantilever it off the side of the house. There's some homes over here on Shady Lawn and Oakdale. You can see where they attach to the side, put a shelf, and it sits up there. There are homes, one in particular note that I think of on Forest, where they had elevated before Ike. They were the first ones back in their house. Not only does it save the cost of the damage, the loss that we all get penalized for, but it also allows them to get back into the house sooner because it's less mechanical work to do. It allows you to run air conditioning, which dehumidifies. So if you cut all your sheetrock and insulation out, you want to get back in. Air conditioning is very important. And so it speeds up that whole recovery process. The other thing this section says is if you replace the disconnect or the meter can on your house, that it also then is elevated. If you have a circuit breaker box and you put it right back where it was at, this does not require you to change anything. If you decide you're going to change and move your breaker box from one side of the house to the other, then you would elevate it. All of these things help reduce damage and speed recovery and get you back in the house. So there is a cost, but the cost is small. If you're already moving a circuit breaker box, that's the big cost, not how high you put it. Same thing with the air conditioning compressor. It's a minor cost, and it's all additive. We had over 475 homes that flooded with water over the first floor. Most of those lost air conditioning compressors. 400 times any number dollar value, that it turns out to be a big number in loss in the community. The next section is another change from the state, who the coordinating board is. It just adds the words Texas Water Development Board and also the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, who will be the coordinating agencies. The next is one that you've heard me talk about several times, particularly when you came to the flood event or flood workshop at the Yacht Club. And this is our general standards. This is citywide standards. And this is where we had talked about not allowing construction on more than 1 foot of fill. So if the property level is such that you only need to come up 1 foot to meet the design elevation, which frankly is only going to be if you had an elevated house already, if you already built an elevated pad and you had a house, and let's say you have a fire and it's more than 50% destroyed, you'd be required to elevate that. So if you're within 1 foot, you can add to it. Otherwise, you'll have to build on piers, which has numerous advantages to the community. We have been doing that since 2009 for everything that's east of Sunrise. So all the construction, there were three homes that were built prior to the ordinance going into effect after I, until today, and it's been very successful for us. It also is going to eliminate a problem that you're going to see with Lake Bioforest on Windleaf. Windleaf, on the south side of the street, that elevation went up 6 feet. On the north side, it went up 5 feet. Now, if you have all those homes already built, and someone comes in and tries to build on fill on a residential lot there, you're talking retaining walls, and it creates new problems, and then it will start channeling water so that those who didn't elevate are going to suffer the consequences of water velocity that's being channeled by the fill. So this says that you can build on fill, but you can only come up 1 foot. Other than that, you have to build on piers, and that construction then encourages you to go up to having a usable height underneath. We've seen that very successful for us on the east side of the city. Instead of coming up to the absolute minimum, people go up to a usable size height for them. So virtually all the homes that have been built since Ike are going to be completely unimpacted by the new map, even though they may have gone up 4 feet. They're already up the 4 feet. So it's a win-win. The other two things that this does in this section, well, the other one thing, it reiterates the 1 foot of fill maximum. The other is it prohibits the use of fill at all, except to achieve drainage. And so that is an issue that we've been successful with, again, on the east end of the city. So this will limit the amount of fill dirt that's brought in and moving water around. Then there's the basis for establishing the flood surge hazard areas. In 2008, we created the flood surge hazard area, and we did that based off of our own empirical study that we did here post-Ike of where the damage was at. And that's what made those special regulations for the east end of the city. Now, that's been reinforced by the limit of water, moderate wave action that the FEMA calculations have showed. So we have rolled that in by addressing it as a limit of moderate wave action. While that's not a not required regulation by FEMA, it is credit on the CRS. So by referencing the what they call the LIMOA, we now will get additional CRS credit. However, it also expands to our new western end, because now there's a LIMOA that covers Bioforest and Windleaf. And so we changed the language here to follow the LIMOA and identify our special flood surge area, and we add a zone at that end of the city as well. It would have the same types of regulations that we have on the far east. Then we have the surge hazard area, which is what we just talked about. There's another section that addressed the construction standards there. And that is the entirety of the changes in this ordinance.
We're going to continue with discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Stowe. I don't have any questions for
him. Alderman McKellen?
The only thing I'd like to say right now is, Mr. Starr, your presentation that you gave at the Yacht Club was outstanding and very informative, and I appreciate you taking your time to do that.
I just have one question. Under Section 3043, dealing with new and replaced mechanical and electrical service equipment, do you happen to know how many CRS points that section is worth?
I do not. As a matter of fact, I don't know for a fact that it's worth any points. Okay. It certainly is the value.
That's the only thing that I have concern with out of everything, is just not even the aesthetics of it, but you know, some of us are sitting pretty low still. If we have to put our air conditioner compressor up, it could be taller than the house. And I mean, just the logistics of that, first of all, it would just look terrible, but the just the logistics of that, I understand what they're trying to do, but I mean, our unit went underwater for 3 days and it fired right back up. We were lucky, but you know, that's the only concern I have. And I see the exception that if your breaker box, if you're in a non-substantially damaged house, you do not have to elevate that. Is that how I'm reading it?
Yes, if you're if your load distribution center, which we all call a breaker box, if it, and there's some bad ones out there.
Right.
Just a poor design. You know, if you have a FP, a Federal Electric, stab lock, breaker box, as an electrician, I say replace it. And it will tell you to replace it when it burns up. But if you replace it, this says that you do not have to elevate to replace it in place.
Okay.
So as long as you don't move it, you put all brand new in. Because we're not trying to create additional costs.
Right.
But if you move it, if you're moving it, you've already bought all the expense of changing the wiring and do that. It doesn't make any sense to put a brand new one too low. And I feel the same way about the air conditioning compressor. There's lots of other examples out there in the building code. For example, if you have a gas water heater, we will not let you put it back where it was if it's not 18 inches off the floor. You have to bring it to current code when you replace it. And so there are a lot of other examples of things that have to be brought current when the device is changed. And all this does is just do the same thing for air conditioning compressor for flood purposes.
Okay. I'm just wondering if it's a little over-regulation, especially if it's not worth any CRS points. Because I know that, you know, I think we're sitting at a 9. We'd certainly like to get to an 8. That would be under 5%. I was just wondering if it was worth any CRS points. And that's my only concern. That's all.
Okay. Just briefly, I kind of look at this whole thing as there's really three just different impacts. The first one is really section 30-37, which I like, and that is the adoption of the flood insurance rate cap. And what we've done in here, what I like, is that any revisions are adopted by reference. Okay, so we'll never have to visit this again. So if they come out next year and they do this, go through this whole process, this is what gets us our insurance, this section here. And it's all incorporated so that if they revise it again, we don't have to vote on it. That's a good thing. I like that. So that's well written. I know Fairman recommended that as well. And so when I break it down into 3 points, it's getting the insurance. We've done that. And then the second part is the CRS points. Most of what this is involves somebody building a new home. So increasing that baseboard is great for somebody building a new home. It doesn't really impact me. I already own a home. I can't go increase the baseboard without raising my home. And then the third part is how does it impact existing homeowners, and that's only the part about raising the your air conditioning units, which I think might be overkill, but I'm not gonna fight it at this point. But what I'd like to see us do is to work harder at getting more points. We currently have 829 points total. You have to go over 500 to get to, you know, the rating of 9. And we're short about, 171 points to get to a rating of 8, which gives us an additional 5% insurance discounts. And there's, I think there's quite a few things that we can work on, and I think the city just needs to put a plan together to meet, potentially even so. We'll never get to a rating of 1. There's only 4 communities in the entire United States that has that. Not going to happen. But we could certainly get to a 7 at some point. And that's my comments on it. I really think we need to work harder at getting these points, because when is the next time we can apply for points again?
Next year.
Next year. And I'd like to get a calculation of things that we need to do. So, for example, drainage system maintenance, conducting periodic inspections of all channels and retention basins to remove debris as needed, such as mowing our ditches, for example. That gets us points. Keeping our ditches clean, ensuring that our stormwater can flow, those are things we need to work on. I'm good. Thank you.
No.
We're going to
vote.
Do you
want to
make a comment?
I was going to just comment on the automatic revision language. That is something that FEMA put forth. There is a municipal attorney in Texas that would tell you that will hold water. We've got a whole lot of court decisions that said you cannot adopt a law that hasn't been written yet. And so we cannot enforce something that has not been written. So this makes FEMA happy. So I'm happy, but trust me, the next time a map comes, we'll be revising
it. Well, we may need to revise it, but we're still going to be able to have insurance according to FEMA.
So you're passing an ordinance that automatically adopts it, right?
Yeah, so.
Okay. So we're going to vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Passes unanimously. 7.4, consideration and approval resolution number 2016-09, designating representative and official alternative to the Houston Galveston Area Council 2017 General Assembly. Do we have a motion?
Make a motion that we pass resolution 2016-09. Designating a representative and an official alternate to the Houston Galveston Area Council 2017 General Assembly.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve resolution number 2016-09 brought by Alderman Snell, seconded by Alderman Hoskins. Do you guys want discussion?
We
have to have discussion.
Okay.
So we're just going to... You want to open it up? Do you want to start presenting? Okay. Anyone want to volunteer? Nobody. I'll do it. I've been going anyway.
Okay. Then I would like to nominate Mayor Sanford to be the primary representative to the General Assembly. Anybody want to volunteer to be the backup?
I'll be the backup.
And then I'd like to nominate Alderman Hoskins to be the backup.
So we are designating the mayor.
Essentially.
Right, we're designating me as the representative and Hoskins as the alternate. Okay, so we have a motion brought by Alderman Schnell. Robert Alderman Snell appointing myself, Mayor Sanford, as representative for the Houston Galveston Area Council 2017 General Assembly, and the alternate will be Alderman Hoskins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Alderman Snell really should amend her motion to include those names. So that we have the motion with the names in it.
Okay, then I make an amendment that resolution 2016-209 will read, the first paragraph will read that Kim Sanford will be designated as the representative, and paragraph two, that the official alternative will be Ron Hoskins.
And that's just an amendment of your original motion.
Yes, it's an amendment. Now
you vote on
it.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Do we have to go back to
just amended her original motion.
We voted on the amendment.
First. We voted on the amendment first, and then we voted on the original one, and then we amended it. The original
right.
One.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay,
7.5, consideration and approval of resolution number 2016-210 requiring the city to post check register for each city checking account on the city website. Hoskins. Do we have a motion?
You know, I'd like to, this really is not my resolution at all. I actually stole it from Alderman Jennings. And if you'd like to make a motion on it, I'd love to vote on it today. It's not that late. But if not, we can go ahead and allow it to pass for lack, not be voted on for lack of a motion. So Alderman Jennings would like to make a motion. It was originally used back in a little more than a year ago?
Yeah, I've got it on the agenda for Thursday night. I'd rather worry about the budget before I worry about this stuff. So, I'm good.
So, send back for like a motion?
Yep.
If there's no other further business, we will adjourn at 8:18.